I'm Maureen Ballatore, and this is Spilled Salt, a podcast on the thrills and spills from the food, beverage, and agriculture industries. Today's guest is Adi Akufu-Afil, and he is really a jack of all trades, which he calls himself that on the podcast today. I am so excited for you to hear Adi talk about his journey from the world of Dunkin' Donuts as a donut shaman way back when, and how he reflects fondly on that time. But really, like, Adi is an innovator and has spent a very long time in the investment space in a lot of different ways that are atypical, I would say, too, right? Like, he's not just a traditional investor, but he's really innovating in the way that that space is managed, which is what he talks about a lot today in terms of some of his work history at WeFunder and some other organizations, and right up to some of the startups that he is building himself with some partners today. Enjoy the conversation. Adi, how are you?
Hey. Hi, fine, thank you. Yourself, Marie?
Good, very good, very good. I'm so excited to have you on the podcast today.
I'm so excited to be here. Like, truly, I know it's been a while, so.
Yes. So, usually, like, a lot of my guests on the podcast are doing, like, they've spent their entire career in food and beverage. I wanted Adi on because he has a little bit of a different kind of angle on that, and it's more in the fundraising and investment angle. And so I'm excited to dive into that. But you started as a donut shaman, and now you're here. So take us back to the beginning.
All right, absolutely. So I'd say, like, my first ever job growing up was at Dunkin' Donuts, right? So I'd say that was probably, I mean, funny enough, everyone's job is usually in some kind of retail or some kind of, like, small restaurant space.
Yeah, I started in a grocery store.
It happens, right? It's always around food or something close enough to food where it's like in a mall. You're working at a retail shop, right? So that was my first ever job. I just remember initially I was like just the front end person, right? Just pretty much just like, hey, you want a donut? Here you go. Let me sling these donuts over to you. How much do you want? And then from there, I got to like start baking in the back, and then also just like going back and forth and seeing so many, like having so many different hats associated with that that role. But it definitely was one of those roles that kind of instilled some aspects of like how I operate now as an individual in me. It's like, hey, always show up, make sure you're giving 100% of your time, make sure you're listening to customers, make sure that you're actually adding value where you can, and also how to collaborate with people in order to like get like at the end of the day, like complete something or complete a mission or anything you have in mind. So it was, I'd say it's a lot of different things that I learned in like that small role that have definitely been with me ever since kind of like growing out of it. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love the way that you reflect on that too, that, you know, it's not just like, oh, that was a silly little job when I had when I was a kid, you know, but you're thinking of it as foundational work that is informing the work that you're doing today. So absolutely. then you leave the donut world behind begrudgingly, I'm sure. And then you started dabbling in investment like pretty early on, right? Doing some advising and investing. So tell us about that.
Absolutely. So I'd say my first ever time I think an advisor to a company at any point in time was back in Rochester, New York. I think I just recently come back from Ghana, and I kind of gone back into school during that time because I left for about 4 years overall. But when I came back, I think I'd had all this, experience I've had during the time where I was just helping out with my family's businesses, and at the same time also like doing internships and all the kind of fun stuff in between. And then also dived into venture by doing an internship with this early stage VC firm based out of West Africa. And so during that time when I first came back, I realized, wow, there's just so much I've learned during this time that I would love to help like early stage founders, early stage business owners who are not streamlining their systems in any kind of way, right? So there's always stuff where it's like, hey, you guys are spending too much money on this, where you're getting your produce from, how are you doing your marketing, how are you dealing with customer engagement, all this kind of areas that they were kind of missing out on, because again, for them it was mostly focused on making the next dollar at the end of the day and making sure they're keeping the lights on versus anything else. So they weren't really paying too much attention to how their customers felt or any of that stuff, mm-hmm. or how to expand their businesses. So they were
kind of missing the forest through the trees, right? That
exactly.
They were so focused on bringing in that top line revenue that
yep.
underneath the surface, it's like a duck, right? With their little feet are just yep. swimming and going so quickly. And it's like, yep. whoa, we can coast a little bit here. Let's get some processes
exactly.
in place.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And I think the first role I ended up jumping into was with Center of Urban Entrepreneurship. So they were hiring individuals for the summer to like work with like students at the end of the day. And then after the summer of going through that program, they brought me on more or less like a part-time role to start working with adults at the end of the day. And during that time, funny enough, there's some local folks that I'll mention from like upstate New York and Rochester. The folks I first started helping with were like Louise from Munchies and Panadas, but he just had his first location and didn't have food trucks or any of that stuff. And Kat Bucha, Kat. Who at that point in time was still working over at, I forgot the coffee shop. It's close enough to Fuego. She was still working at Fuego and selling from Fuego. And Fuego was right by the, close to the Liberty Pole, right? At that point mm-hmm. in time. And so working with these individuals and being like, hey, what are you guys doing in terms of expanding? How are you guys looking at things? And like just being a soundboard to them. And all of a sudden, like for Kat, she expanded extremely fast at the end of the day. She knew exactly what she wanted. She won the pitch competition yeah. afterwards and then expanded the Louise did the same thing where now he has, I think, 2 food trucks. He's able to do catering and all that kind of fun stuff. And then afterwards, it just kind of snowballed from there, where it was first initially food, but then it started expanding over to like more tech-focused startups.
Mm-hmm. And so what are some of the, you mentioned, I wanted to ask you about like the most common challenges that you see, and you spoke to like streamlining processes, but what mm-hmm. other kind of examples can you give listeners about what you're most commonly advising on?
Absolutely. I mean, initially would be hiring, right? So one of the biggest ones is mm-hmm. always hiring. And then second to that would be marketing at the end of the day. I think a lot of individuals, especially mom and pop shops, don't focus on how much money they're actually putting into marketing or the different routes they're utilizing. Most of the time it's, I'm like, hey, what are you doing for marketing? Like, hey, we're spending $4,000 on this radio ad. And I'm like, okay, what's the conversion on that? How are you tracking this? How many people are going there? You just like,
yes.
It comes to a point, if you're a big enough company, sure, go ahead and do a radio ad, right? Just spread it out. But in the very initial stages, you want to see the ROI associated with anything you're doing. And so yeah. for me, it was always like, hey, maybe you should think about this a little bit more methodically, where it's like, you can go ahead and see the results of it to test out whether or not it's working. And so basic stuff like that, where then I'm like, hey, look, I am not an expert in this. Go ahead and talk to an expert. But initially, you should think about this way and test it out with a little mm-hmm. bit of dollars versus spending so much on an ad that you think you may get returns on. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So it was always,
yeah.
for me, it was always tracking, track everything, your expenses, or you're looking at marketing, whether you're looking at hiring someone, what is the, like, how much, like, I think for Luis, especially during the early days and some other organizations, it was, for the amount of time the individual is working at your location, how much money are you making during that time they're there, right? And I think that's always mm-hmm. like when to reduce our hours or not. So I remember initially we were hiring some employees and it was like a lull during like the times between like 9 a.m. when they were there to like to around 12. And so for us, it's like, hey, maybe we kind of push this back, or are they doing more of the prep work, or what else can we have during this time when there's a lull and just there, right? And so we were able to kind of change that up a little bit in order to get reduce the spend, our overall expenses, but at the same time also utilize them correctly at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm. So what you're speaking to is something that we are often helping clients of all sizes approach as well. Efficiency, right? It's the, you're talking about it in terms of ROI and making sure that every dollar is spent smartly. And it's a phrase that I use often with clients too, when I'm consulting too, to say, if you're giving me a dollar and you're asking me where I would spend it, it's not on that thing that you're like, you know, should we go spend $25,000 on a trade show booth, mm-hmm. you know, but we could get in front of retailers. It's like,
yeah.
yes, but have you gotten into every independent retail door you can mm-hmm. first right now, right before you do that so that you've got some efficiency in the game. So it's just interesting that that is a challenge for companies of all sizes, is that kind of efficiency approach.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's something, and I know for a fact that it's something that has to be learned, and it's usually by failure, right? It's usually like, hey, I failed once at this, and luckily enough, I think when you get into that position where you're an advisor to many different people or just a soundboard to many different people, you're able to see their failures and then basically take that information and help out an earlier stage company that's like right on that cusp of doing something like that. So it's always been good.
Yep. Love that. Okay. I want to talk about WeFunder a bit. Yeah. So you spent almost 4 years there. What is WeFunder? Talk about, I can't even ask you about your role because you had multiple roles there. So take us through that a little bit.
Absolutely. So WeFunder is a regulation crowdfunding platform that is focused more on equity versus, let's say, gifts or products at the end of the day, right? So what I mean by that is WeFunder allows anyone who has a idea or business who incorporates to raise funding from individuals who believe that their idea or concept is something that they want to happen, right? And so what we've seen is that a lot of companies that come onto our platform are usually consumer focused or may have a B2B play where individual stakeholders either purchase their product or in some kind of way admire the product at the end of the day are able to go ahead and invest into it in the long term. And so now they have a stake in the growth of the company. And so where we see that being a huge benefit for a lot of these early stage creators is that now they have a almost like a street team at the end of the day who is willing to go ahead and basically shout their name from the top of the building, right? And pretty much say like, hey, look, I'm backing this company. I think it's amazing. I think you guys should utilize it. And I think going back into something I remember previously in the early days of WeFunder, it was always like that focus on that street team effect where we used to tell founders, allowing your fan base and consumer base to invest in your product is almost this way for you to expand your, especially if you're a CPG product or just a physical product, it's a way for you to almost expand your marketing team, right? Or your sales team. These individuals, you can activate them and say, hey, go to your local independent shop. And if you're selling wine or something and you request our wine at the end of the day,
All
of a sudden you have distribution from some location. It's like, hey, look, we got requests associated with your product. But
So I never really thought of it that way. I always thought of it as it's a simpler way to do like a friends and family round, which is also true, right? But I love the concept of advocates, and it's also something that all companies need, you know, advocates, champions in their corner, right? And that the fact that I love the way that you're talking about it, in that you have this audience that has your back, that you can say, okay, we just got on shelf in Sprouts. Please go to your local Sprouts store, you know, and buy our product and, you know, tell all your friends. So talk a little bit more about so that's a great sort of 101 of the company, but like talk a little bit more about your work that you did there.
Absolutely. So initially when I joined the team, I was an inbound representative, right? So initially, funny enough, the earlier story was initially they asked me to join the team in order to like travel around the US and open up these like satellite community circles. And so I was going to go to like different regions to like start this almost community or backing or a group of advocates who were like focused on regulation crowdfunding. And then March 2020 happened and they're like, we're bringing you in-house, right? So then I joined their inbound team where pretty much all I was doing on a daily basis was like initially just chatting with founders, doing some of the due diligence behind them and making sure that they were okay to go on to the next individuals. And if they weren't, then from there, making sure them an account manager and helping them out throughout this entire time. So initially started off as a representative, then went on to lead the inbound team, had a few folks underneath me, built out the processes regarding like everything from diligence to then pretty much making sure that it was almost like a white glove effect, pretty much making sure that, hey, we're rolling them out so they really have individuals to speak to. If they need their financials reviewed, we send them over to a CPA, we send them over to a marketing team, all the fun stuff. From there, joined the BD team, where I was mostly focused on either working with incubator programs or individuals who were in some form working with early stage companies that could be, this could be a great opportunity for them to raise capital from, like you said, if they had advocates or individuals who wanted to join in, or this was like an early stage friends and family, we were working with key stakeholders that had access to a lot of these individuals. So again, incubators, incorporation companies were always a big one for me, and just kind of building out those partnerships. Then from there, tapped into the venture side of it, where we started like working more or less with like CDFIs, or matching funds or corporations that had some kind of incentive they wanted to push, right? So it's either like, hey, Visa would be like, hey, look, if there's a fintech company that's based in this area and they're looking to raise capital, connect this over. And if anything, I'll give them a 50K check into their round, right? So it was different programs like that, even from a national or I guess a statewide. We started doing stuff with Alaska, stuff in New York, where it was also matching funds based on geographic location and also like stage. So that's where the bulk of my last couple of years there, where I was mostly focused on these kind of programs, where I was working with key stakeholders within these regions to send us more deal flow, but then also creating initiatives and programs regarding that to then help out the founders that they sent over, right? And so super fun stuff.
So it's, yeah, it sounds it. And I didn't realize that you had that kind of corporate partnership angle. Mm-hmm. I recently had a call with a state innovation organization, not New York State, but a different state, mm-hmm. Has like this innovation program, and they're putting on this incubator that is similar to what you're talking about, which it's mm-hmm. interesting to hear that continue to pop up, right? That these corporate partners are like, we've got the money. We want to back your innovation. And so absolutely. That's a whole ecosystem of interesting stuff. Like, what are some of the other things that you're seeing in that vein? Because I'm sure that that's for our listeners, like piquing some interest of, absolutely. Oh shit, I can go get like Visa money. I can get yeah. investment from American Express. Say more. Yeah. So what does that usually look like?
So I'd say it's mostly based upon the industries that they're looking to invest in. And so usually if you go over to like any kind of corporation's website and you see what they're like usually giving back to, you're able to go ahead and track that and reach out. That's one of the biggest ones. I think for Visa, they remember their main focus during that time was mostly MENA region. So like Middle East, Africa, and North Africa. And then also they were looking to expand past that over to East and South Africa. And then I think for a few different ones, I think MTN is probably, well, not MTN, geez, M&T is looking at this. I'm thinking about Ghana right now, sorry. M&T is also doing a lot of stuff locally as well. And I think they're looking at either providing mentorship or something like that. But I can definitely see an angle where they're also potentially looking to provide some kind of capital at the end of the day if it's something that suits like their programming and our initiatives are looking to go. KeyBank is always a big one. KeyBank is looking at so many different incentives for individuals within the Chicago, New York State region. But again, that's mostly focused. They always have some industry or something they're kind of focused on. I know for a fact we were looking at, there are organizations like, especially in upstate New York, what's the big wine company? I was kind of missing my mind. Right? Constellation Brands. There we go.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
So Constellation's a huge one, right? So Constellation, I remember during 2020 and 2021, they pushed out an initiative focused on early stage beverage companies, right? And I know for them, they were mostly focused on, during that time, they were focused on minorities and women at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. So those two programs had, I think, a $10 million endowment from the organization. But something like that where reaching out to, especially if you fit the demographic they're looking for,
right.
Reaching out to them is always a big one because, again, that's corporate money, but also that's also distribution at the end of the day and
yeah.
also mentorship that can help you scale. But mm-hmm. a lot of these organizations are pushing these initiatives. Mars is a big one that's also pushing a lot of different initiatives all over mm-hmm. extremely, but you just have to like kind of look for them at the end of the day because I know Mars has their pet care side of it.
and they also have their food-based side of it too. So it's all about looking at these large organizations and finding out exactly what they do from a local initiative like level.
Yeah. Yep. And I love the angle that you're talking about taking with that too, right? Find the folks that would be a ideal partner for you and then look at, is there some sort of natural intersection with their give back strategies in terms of region, industry, mission, right? Some alignment there that you can find that, that helps you with that initial outreach. I love it.
Absolutely.
Okay. So you took a career break in 2023. Was that post WeFunder?
Yeah. Yeah. So that was post WeFunder. And so for that one, during that career break, man, that was, I took off nearly a year. Right? So I'm now just coming back, right? But I took off a year at the end of the day, which again, I'm like, I know a lot of people are unfortunate to have that, but luckily enough, you know, we were able to do so. And during that time, I wanted to explore everything I potentially could in terms of any idea I'd ever had in my life in terms of like, hey, I think I want to do something in this vein. I just did. Like, you know, I was like, hey, I'm going to incorporate an LLC and just like basically have a design studio with a bunch of friends. And we're just going to go ahead and like, I will do all the research regarding a project I like. And then from there, I'm going to have you guys build the initial side of it. I'll just product manage, you guys build it, and then from there we raise capital. I would just pass it on to you guys, the developer. I just love developing ideas, finding the right team in order to build it, and then from there just like helping them scale. Because like one of my biggest things is I'm like a jack of all trades, right? And so like in order to build something, you can't be a jack of all trades. You need someone who's like an expert in this. And so for me, it's like I could think about the ideas and find all the solutions and loopholes, but in order for this to scale, I need someone who will just focus on this one thing and they're amazing at it. So that's what I was able to do during this career break. Initially we got into Antler. And then from there, we also got into Launch New York. And so it's just kind of been expanding past that.
So it wasn't a career break in, I'm going to go backpack through Europe. I'm going to go, you know, it was a time where you gave yourself space to determine what you wanted to do next, right? You took that time to like reflect and think about, you know, what's the kind of thing that I want to be doing? And then who do I want to work with to bring that to life? Right?
Absolutely. Yeah. 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 It was more or less like, I'd say it was a professional break, right? Versus like, let me go ahead and explore.
Well, professional break from a traditional job, right? You were, you were transitioning into, I want to be Addy the entrepreneur and I want to like, you know, be able to incubate my dreams. Like I've been incubating other people's dreams for my entire career. Right.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Good for you. So talk about the outcome of that.
So, okay. So for us, it was quite a bit. I think we went through three different projects during that time. Like our first one we did when we got into Antler, we initially tested out this concept for like 2 days. And we realized that like specifically that accelerator program wasn't attuned to do that. Right. And so we ended up switching over to our second idea. That idea, we tested out for 6 weeks. And within 9 weeks, we generated like 47K in revenue, and we had like carry on a lot of different deals we were operating in. And it was one of those amazing learning curves where we were able to just do so much so fast with a small team. However, weren't able to get the follow-on funding from Antler at that point in time. So that was something that was extremely shocking for us. And so with that, we ended up taking a break from it, even though a lot of people were like, it's lucrative, keep moving forward with it. I think it just was a massive shock to us at the end of the day. So we said like, okay, let's put it on the side until like we're able to put a lot more time and put a lot more of our own money into this to make it something that is like truly ours. And most likely it'll never be venture backable, but it was definitely helpful for a lot of startup founders who were looking to raise capital, right? It was around the capital raising process and how venture capital isn't just the only thing you can look for. So we basically built a system that, based upon a founder's metrics, based upon a founder's like company metrics, we pretty much provided them different sources of funding they can go ahead and receive.
Oh, and wow.
Then, yeah. And then from there, it'd be like, it pretty much would, you know, usually a lot of people have to apply to many, 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 many different places, right? For us, right. It was like a one application process where we basically worked with these partners. It got sent out to them. If they liked your company, if they liked your metrics and everything, they would then do an opt-in and then you would receive it. So it didn't waste anyone's time at the end of the day, right?
Gotcha. So it's kind of like online dating for VC funding, right?
Exactly. It was VC funding. Wow. It was VC inventory, revenue-based, even going towards like angel checks where people have like, you know, hey, look, if want to invest directly into you, fantastic. If not, then we do it through an SPV. It was pretty much like a wholesome product overall where we just did a lot on the back end. But again, we're doing this all manual. And so that was like one of our biggest things. We wanted to like build a product behind it, but we realized, you know, in terms of time, we just didn't have the resources in order to do so right now. And it was something where I think in the future, if no one's built it by then, right, we're just like, oh yeah, we'll go back and do it. But for now, it was one of those things where it's like, if somebody's building it, we need to help them by giving them everything that we've already discovered from it. Because we believe that it's something all founders desperately need, even to a point where even our vendors were like, why? We want to help you build it. And we're just like, yeah, that's great, but like, we need like technology. We need a tech team, right? And so in order to it was just very hard for us at the end of the day. But we ended up moving on to different projects. And so we've kind of like kept on pushing those projects for now.
Yeah. Very, very cool idea though. I love it. Yeah. You're making reference to Antler. What is that?
So Antler is a early stage incubator program where it runs for about 6 weeks. At the end of the day, they select individuals, like usually between 7 to 10 different teams to basically fly out to a certain region. Currently, I think Antler has 4 locations now in the U.S., New York City, Colorado, Austin, and then L.A. But they're a global incubator program at the end of the day. And so what ends up happening is, they bring you in, they give you a little bit of a stipend initially, or now they do, in the past they did, now they do. And then after 6 weeks, based upon your progress and what if they like your company, they'll give you a 250K check for like 7% of your company, I believe. So very much like Y Combinator, but I would say it's definitely like more, I think YC gives you the funding a little bit ahead of time. These guys do it after they've kind of already seen how you work and see how you operate at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Yeah. Gotcha. Understood. Okay. So you decided this isn't the thing that we're going to do right now. And so then what happened? Yeah.
So from there, we ended up working on 2 other projects, right? So I was like, okay, now I have more time now. I don't, right? So I was like, all right. One, the year's almost coming up, right? I have like 7 more months. I have to do something. So I ended up doubling down on 2 different projects. One of them was focused on the SMB space, right? So for food and beverage SMB owners and operators, we basically created like a customer engagement platform that would be absolutely free for them. And then we would just make our money based on the customer themselves, right? And so we were like, hey, with DoorDash and all these delivery platforms, always basically taking a cut of the SMB owners, like delivery at the end of the day or revenue at the end of the day, what if we were able to increase in-store traffic more, right? If we could increase in-store traffic, would you still give the individuals that come in store a discount for them coming in, right? Because the biggest incentive for a lot of people at home is that, hey, I'm at home, it's convenient for DoorDash to deliver it. But what ends up happening is that the store or the operator ends up getting like 20-30% less of revenue or margins at the end of the day, right? And so for us, I was like, hey, what's the minimum amount you would take for margin costs if people decided not to go through DoorDash, but to come to you directly via your restaurant, right? Because the incentive there is,
right.
Yeah. Incentive.
Allowing them to raise their costs across the board so that they can incentivize people. It's like the opposite, right? Yeah. So a friend of mine owned a pizza shop and they wanted to try and incentivize people to exactly what you're saying, like come in and pay cash. I won't explain why, right? They wanted to pay cash. That's a different podcast. But it's that idea that you're not allowed to mark up. It is illegal to mark up for credit card fees, but you can offer a cash discount if you don't run a credit card. Right. Yeah. So it's kind of, it's flipping the whole idea on its head, right? Allowing those food and beverage business owners raise your costs across the board to account for what you need them to be, and then incentivize people to come into the store if they want to pay less.
Exactly. So that was like our biggest, like, with that in mind, we started like talking to a lot of vendors, like anything from restaurants that of course weren't like, you know, Michelin star or anything like that, but restaurants, food trucks, places that would serve like smoothies, all that stuff. We couldn't do alcohol, of course, for many different reasons, but it was, so we started talking to a lot of these individuals and they all said like, yeah, if you can get me more people into my store, I'm happy to go ahead and provide them a discount. And so we started realizing, okay, that's fantastic, but how else can we be of value to you, the restaurant or business owner? So we started doing more stuff like content for them, basically doing everything from content, events, experiences, because we started realizing, I'm pretty sure you know about these guys in upstate New York, the Brainery, Rochester Brainery, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So for me, we started looking at a lot of the stuff that we were doing and realizing, hey, Rochester Brainery is almost this extra ancillary like service that can work with a lot of local businesses that are doing food. Because if you can imagine this, where it's like, hey, you go to a bakery, you love that croissant, right? And you're like, oh, this croissant's amazing. However, what if that bakery decides to like open up a class where it's like, hey, learn to make a croissant, right? Mm-hmm. I'll charge $5 for you to come and learn a croissant. Now they're making more revenue by you coming in to make that croissant. But guess what? You are most likely never going to make a croissant at home, but it's an experience you would love to have.
Exactly.
Right?
You're gonna, exactly.
You're gonna realize how expensive it is to make a croissant. And you're going to love that more often, but you're still going to love that experience. And so we started seeing this Airbnb experiences model mixed with like working with local businesses to have these courses. And we started finding ways to generate more revenue from that, as well as work with all these local businesses to have more of these experiences and events and stuff, where we've been doing stuff like taco wars, where it's like every single Tuesday we'll have two different taco restaurants create a certain taco, and then from there they can go ahead and pretty much also like make different tacos for different people. So people can order out what they think the best taco is, but the chef is the one who's like basically facing off each other, whoever buys the most.
Right.
With like everyone, you know, it's kind of this extra experience. But we just started playing around with that kind of concept and it really started taking off, where vendors really, really started reaching out to us and say we want to be a part of this program. And so now we are taking more time to develop out the entire platform, redevelop a website, do everything, and then relaunching. But that's something that, yeah, it just took off from there. And so now that's something that my buddy and I, well, that was three co-founders, and then we have an engineering team. And so they're going to, I'm finishing up the product, but then they're going to go ahead and manage the company afterwards.
That's awesome. So is that, can we make a plug for that? Is that like, does that have a name? Can we help promote it?
Yeah. So hopefully right now we're going to be starting off in Austin, Texas, right? So right now the company is called Feast Pass. And so you're going to hopefully, if I think we're on LinkedIn, oh no, sorry, not LinkedIn, Instagram. So feel free to go ahead and reach out to us on there. I think right now we have absolutely nothing on there. We've just basically closed off everything. We're going to be restarting. But as we scale, and I think we will be in the upstate New York region and keep on bouncing to different locations, absolutely. So we'd love to work with any vendors who are listening today and so on. It'd be fantastic.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah. That's awesome. So you, and there's another one too under that same umbrella, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Just give the high Everyone's level like, of that, because I think that one's, I know you're doing a lot, but I love that one too, because it so deeply connects to like your work history too, with like WeFunder and everything. So what's the other project that you're moving forward?
Absolutely. So the other project we're moving forward with, which I'm mostly putting majority of a lot of my time into right now, and probably will be the one I sit on for a very, very, very long time, it's a fractional art investment platform that focuses on physical art, right? So pretty much what we're doing is, if you think about it from a level of fractional ownership of a real estate, right? So it's like, hey, you own this piece of real estate. You're able to rent it out to people, and any revenue that's generated from that real estate, you guys split up in dividends towards you and the the original owner, right? So let's go ahead and think for our art concept, if we take this same practice, what we're doing is we're working with emerging artists to delay the sale of their artwork by allowing their audience base to invest into their artwork in order for them to retain a livable wage. From there, mm-hmm. the ownership of it is split between the artist, the investors, and the platform. Mm-hmm. Anything we do at that point in time, we generate revenue from different ways, from renting out the art, from creating different things from the asset, the intellectual property of the art, and so on. And then at the end of the day, any revenue that's generated from that goes back towards the stakeholders within it. At the same time, what we're looking for is an exit of the artwork in the long term, mm-hmm. Where it gets exited to a third party individual for single ownership. And then based upon that, everyone gets paid back a portion of the profit that's made from there, plus their principal back for the investors. Mm-hmm. And then the artist also gets a little bit as well that they've already pre-staked initially in the agreement. But everyone basically makes money from it at the end of the day. And so that's the kind of concept we're going with, where it targets three different stakeholders at the end mm-hmm. of the day. And at the same time, it works with galleries, curators, all these individuals who are looking for some of these artworks that at this point in time mm-hmm. could potentially, you know, be more profitable long term if held for a very long time. And so the way we were kind of doing it is like we're pretty much working with emerging artists who have a good track record of already having these kind of sales, where the past mm-hmm. 2 years their art has gone up by 50-60%. And so for us it's a kind of a great way to target, again, individuals who traditionally are overlooked in terms of their art, because I'm not sure whether people know this, but I'd say an artist is the only individual that doesn't get residuals from their original artwork, right? So it's once they sell it once from an auction site, they never again get royalties, right? Every other mm-hmm. creator, movies, music, anything else, you get royalties from your work.
Right.
But an artist is the only one that would never get that unless already contracted into.
I was just going to say, unless they're licensing. Right.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Which is a whole different business. Yeah.
Exactly. Right. Yep. And so for us, we've realized, hey, this is an opportunity for us to work with these individuals who, again, have been, not only say taken advantage of, but have been put to the side in terms of mm-hmm. this, where it's most of the time, it's individuals who are usually from a different side of life who are creating these amazing masterpieces. So they don't really understand this. They just are like, hey, I want mm-hmm. to survive and make as much money as possible. Mm-hmm. But now it's a way for us to kind of help them long term, where it's like, hey, just like WeFunder, sell 10% of your portfolio with us every single year. Right. Don't do the entire thing, because you need the other individuals, you need the prestige from the galleries, you need the prestige from working with Sotheby's. But if you can delay 10% of your work and go through us and mm-hmm. still make that livable wage you're looking for, why not?
Right. And it helps the average consumer get a start in art investment too, if that's an area of interest, right? So I love that it's benefiting both sides of the coin there, right? Absolutely. That it allows, I had a meeting recently with my financial planner who said, have you thought about non-traditional investment strategies, that are not a 401k like art investment? And I mm-hmm. was like, well, man, I mean, I am an artist. I love art. I love funky stuff, but I don't know, the first thing about investing in a piece of art. And so your platform would allow people like me, right, that have an interest, Absolutely. But not knowledge in that space, to be able to jump into it too. So you're really, Absolutely. You've got a silver bullet there with both sides of it. What is that one called, Addy?
Ooh, that one we have to keep secret for now.
You got to keep that one under wraps? Okay. I know, just so that everyone on the podcast knows that I'm in the loop. I'm beta testing that service. Yeah. Very excited about being able to test that out. But I'm sure we'll be sure to share with everybody once that goes Absolutely. Live, connected Absolutely. To your podcast episode, so that people can jump on board with that.
Love it.
So tell me a little bit more about, last question for you, and then we're going to wrap up. What's next? What's next for you?
I think personally right now, probably the next 2-3 years, it'll be me working on that project, making sure that it goes the length. Is that the terminology? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
And so I want to make sure that we're able to kind of get it from where it currently is. Because right now, as a product, I think we're at the very, 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 very early stages of it, right? And so for me, it's like, now I'm going to be dedicating more of my time in order to make sure that it has every feature that it needs to have. And then also seeing the expansion of it. Because we believe this platform, like you said, it's almost like that early stage, like, investing into startups. It's almost like venture capital.
Exactly. At the end of the day. Yeah, right.
And so we believe that there's other products that need to be built, kind of facilitating this for a lot of different stakeholders that are not currently being taken care of. And so for me, it's kind of expanding upon that in order to make sure that it truly is of value for every single stakeholder within it. And I remember telling a buddy of mine the other day that I think this is probably going to be one of the only projects I work on when every single stakeholder is happy, right? Like it's one of those things where I think, like, if I want to make, for every single thing I do, I want to make sure that everyone is happy, but usually there is some counters to it. But I think this is probably the only one where I can see if everything goes right, first off, if everything goes right, every single stakeholder is happy, right? If everything exits well, everyone's happy. So yeah, that's where I think where I am. I'm not sure.
That's very cool. I love it. I love it. And how exciting to be able to be working on something that is adding value to stakeholders throughout the whole ecosystem like that. But it takes, like, I think that the good lesson for the listeners of this podcast is sometimes it takes that, like, you took a career break to do the deep thinking to get here, right? And that it doesn't just, for a lot of people who are like, well, I want my next big idea. It takes deep thought. It takes innovation and going about that process in the right way to get there, to be able to have something like this that's so special. I'm excited to see the continued growth of that. Can't wait for the launch. Thank you so much for joining me today and telling your story. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Rory.
Thank you for listening to Spilled Salt. I'm Maureen Vallatori. For more information about the podcast, visit www.agency-29.com. If you have questions for me or you'd like to recommend a guest for a future episode, you can send a message using the contact form on the website. Like and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts so you never miss an episode.